Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Coyotes aren't native to Ohio, but they have made themselves at home here and across the country. Naturalist, artist, and author Julie Zickefoos recently told that story for Birdwatchers Digest. She joins us by phone to share her insights. Welcome back, Julie.
Thank you. It's great to be back, Ann.
And listeners, if you've seen or interacted with a coyote in Ohio, tell us your experience. Give us a call or email us, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And you can also check out our Facebook page, post a question or a comment there. Julie, when I started preparing for this and going over the materials you shared with us, I started thinking about Prodigal Summer by Barbara Kingsolver, who talks about the reemergence, well, not the reemergence, well, kind of the reemergence of coyotes, but they didn't very first come here until maybe the early
1919, yeah. Actually. Yeah. And that was actually just a natural range expansion of Western coyotes into Ohio. So it was long thought that the coyotes that we have here in Ohio were pure Western coyotes, and certainly there are genetically pure Western coyotes in Ohio. But a really interesting thing happened in that those animals came from the West, but then we had some come from the North and East. And those turn out to be coyote-wolf-dog hybrids. And that's what is so interesting to me. I was pretty sure that the animals that I am seeing in Southeast Ohio, I live down by Marietta, looked a lot different and sounded different from the Western coyotes that I was used to from out in Arizona. And sure enough, they are larger and darker of coat, and their voices sound different, at least to my ear. And they have possibly a different social structure and different prey base, certainly, than do Western coyotes, which are small rodent hunters.
Yeah, I mean, the coyotes that I'm familiar with seeing around here in the past have been very scrawny, very pathetic, definitely, you know, dusk, come out at dusk. You'd see it when you're walking the dog or something like that, and shy. But that was it. These are kind of hefty looking and fluffy and...
Yeah, one thing that is important to make a distinction is that summer coat for these canids is a lot thinner and shorter than winter coat.
Mm-hmm.
So, and also, sometimes you'll see they're pretty commonly afflicted with a couple of different kinds of mange.
Yeah.
And so when you see a mangy coyote, even if it's a big, robust eastern coyote, you are going to think that it's scrawny and pathetic. But, boy, when you see a healthy one in full fur, quite a sight.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Why the interest in coyotes now?
Well, I've been fascinated with them since I first started seeing them in Connecticut when I lived there in the 1980s, the early 80s. And everybody was abuzz about it because they were newly arrived and to Connecticut, and people were swearing they were wolves. There was no way they were coyotes. They knew about coyotes, and these were so much bigger and heavier fur and so I got very interested, and at that point, people were all referring to them as coy dogs, which was something that I kind of doubted from the start, but it turns out that they do have an admixture of dog genes, perhaps 10%. And they also, eastern coyotes, have about 30%, up to 30% wolf genes. So that's what gets really interesting to me is that this animal that we're seeing down here in Southeast Ohio appears to be a hybrid of those three species.
And is this hybridization something relatively recent?
Well, actually, it's referred to by a lot of biologists as an historic hybridization event.
Okay.
Because what happened was there was a relic population of eastern wolves in the Algonquin Park in Ontario. This is way up north of the Great Lakes, and they were hanging in there. They were protected there, and they had been extirpated almost everywhere else by people. So what happens is coyotes start pushing east because coyotes just have long-distance dispersal. They tend to disperse, you know, over great distances and spread their genes far and wide. So what happened was when they came through that area of Algonquin Provincial Park, male wolves who had trouble finding wolf mates because their numbers were so low would stoop to mate with a female coyote. Now, a female wolf will not have a male coyote. She will not permit that. But a male wolf is a little less, you know, picky. Yeah. I don't know why. So what happened was about a third of the animals around Algonquin Park, when this hybridization started, were actually hybrids. So these coyotes carried these genes farther east, and their populations began exploding. And they no longer needed to mate with wolves. They had enough of each other. And so what you had was a fairly stable mix of animals moving both east and south down into New England. And those were the animals that I was starting to see in Connecticut in the mid-'80s.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. And we're talking about coyotes and how they've traveled and how they've changed in recent years. My guest is Julie Zickafoos, naturalist, artist, and author of many books. We'll put a link to her website on our website at WOSU.org/allsides if you're interested in learning more about Julie and reading her many, many blog postings. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org if you have a question or comment. And Stephanie in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Stephanie.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a 95-pound German Shepherd that I walk along the Olentangy River every day. And last week, for the first time, I saw a gigantic coyote. It was very dark, and it couldn't have been much smaller than my dog, so that was really shocking. And I grew up in California, and I used to see coyotes all the time, and they were much lighter in color and scrawny, and I was just really amazed to see such a beautiful animal in my neighborhood.
Right.
They're incredible, yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead, Julie. Fluffy.
No, let's hear from Stephanie.
What? Oh, okay. All right, Stephanie, go ahead.
Oh, it was really fluffy, too, you know, yeah. Like you were just talking about how they're just such beautiful animals. So,
yeah, they are. And what the thinking is that some of this big size and certainly the different coat colors are probably coming from that 10% admixture of dog genes. So you get a lot more color variation in these animals. I supplied a photo to WOSU of one I photographed in my meadow, which is a very dark brown gray. Really, really cool-looking, big, burly animal. The weights of western coyotes that you were used to seeing in California would be top out around 35 pounds. And there was a female coyote in Massachusetts who was 60 pounds. And for a female, that's very, very large. And she had numerous litters. So the genome of these animals seems to be very plastic, meaning it changes and very quickly. And what's the thinking is that these hybridization events with dogs and wolves made for almost leaps in the differences between western and eastern coyotes. So they've basically been turbo boosted by hybridization.
Interesting. Stephanie, thanks for that call. 614-292-8513. You recorded the sound of some coyotes. We've got it here. Let's listen. Okay, that sounds like a lot of coyotes, and tell me that there's a lot of them there and that just isn't one or two.
Well, yeah, I recorded that about four nights ago. I just stuck my cell phone out my studio window, and those things every once in a while sound off literally in my yard. And what we were probably hearing, the social organization of these coyotes here in the East tends to be an alpha pair who are strictly monogamous. They're the only ones that breed in the group, up to five or six other adult animals, and their pups of the year. So that could be quite a pack. And the deal is that they know where each other is all the time. They have meeting places where they gather to make these howling. And my guess is that what was happening there is that they were reuniting for an evening's hunt. And they were greeting each other and very excited to see each other. And who knows, maybe somebody dragged in a haunch of a deer, you know. Mm-hmm. But I would so love to see this this thing that I can hear. And I always get the biggest grin on my face when I hear them, because to me, they're the essence of the wild. And they are thriving and expanding and helping us with our deer overpopulation problem.
How so? I mean, are they just, that's their primary feed or what?
Not really. I mean, they do a lot of scavenging, of course, from hunter carcasses. But they are able to take down deer if they work together. They work differently from wolves. Coyotes usually attack from the front and grab the throat and the nose. And there's some crazy videos on YouTube of there's one, a guy shooting in his backyard of a pair of coyotes taking down a doe. So, you know, while that may upset some people, I would wager that we could stand to have a few less deer on the road with collisions. I don't know about you, but when I've been driving this winter and fall, I've been astonished at the number of carcasses on the road.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of deer out there.
And better they go naturally than...
I guess I would beg for acceptance of an apex predator in our midst, one that doesn't really cause many problems, you know? They seem to live with us. I had, for 12 years, a 25-pound Boston Terrier wandering around my yard. Coyotes right there. They never bothered him.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the rule, but I got lucky. And I know that had they wanted to kill him, they would have.
What about people with chickens and that kind of a thing, though? That's a little bit more of a...
I don't think of coyotes as quite the chicken predators the foxes are, but certainly they're opportunistic. Chickens need to be put in at night, of course, and, I think that probably most at risk are wandering house cats. That's exactly in the prey size that coyotes like to take.
Is it your article that I read or another one that noted that they also like to invade fox dens?
Yeah, it's really pretty interesting. When we first moved here in 1992, the only canids we were seeing were red and gray foxes, and I found dens of both species on our land. And that was what you saw running in front of the car, you know, on the country roads.
Mm-hmm.
And they have virtually disappeared. And it is known that coyotes will clean out fox dens. They like to eliminate competition. So, you know, it's a push-pull of nature, and now I get very, very excited when I see a fox. Certainly they're clinging, and foxes seem to be moving into suburban settings, maybe to get away from coyotes. But coyotes actually are it's amazing in the Chicago area how coyotes are moving into and have moved in and established themselves in suburban areas.
Jake in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Jake.
Hi, Ann. As to echo what was just said, I live in Columbus near Interstate 71 and Route 161 in the northern side of Columbus. And there's a small park there, Woodward Park, and has some trails and things like that. Nice park. And when we first moved to the area, there was talk in the community of, oh, there are coyotes over there. There are coyotes over there, you know, and my wife and I just kind of thought, you know, yeah, right, you know, just kind of talk among, like, some people in the community.
Urban legend, right, yeah.
Yeah, essentially, you know, the Woodward Park monster, whatever. But, you know, this last year, on a few occasions running over there or walking my dog over there, my wife and I separately have spotted a coyote or two. And, you know, thought, wow, that's really interesting. The north central part of Columbus, coyotes here, not really something we had thought about before.
Right.
Well, when you think about it, suburban and even urban habitats are very food rich for coyotes, and they aren't living on garbage as was formerly thought. These animals are killing gray squirrels, rabbits, groundhogs, small rodents, rats, that kind of thing. And what's really interesting about them is they are extremely skilled at going without being seen. And in the Chicago area, radio collaring revealed that they actually will dig dens in highway cloverleaf patches. Because when you think about it, if you find in an urban area one piece of land that nobody goes on, it would be that. because the cars are whizzing around it all the time, and the coyotes are very adept at dodging across four lanes of traffic and getting to their perfectly safe, basically surrounded by a moat, den.
Interesting point. Jake, thanks for that call. We have other calls we're going to get to. My guest is naturalist, artist, a prolific author, Julie Zickafoos. She joins us by phone. We're talking about coyotes today. Tell us what you've seen, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher, talking about coyotes today. Joining us by phone, naturalist, author, and artist Julie Zickafoos. She wrote about coyotes recently for Birdwatchers Digest. We'll have a link to her article on our website at wosu.org/allsides. Meantime, if you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Now, you made reference to this a little bit. There's a New York Times article from last spring that mentioned how coyotes are great colonizers. That means they reproduce quickly and protect their flock. So
well, they have the like many animals, they have the ability to have larger litters when food is abundant. So, you know, the median is like 5 to 7 pups. That's a lot of coyotes.
Yeah,
and they can go up to 11. So yeah, they have the potential to really explode in an area very quickly. Where I live, I have neighbors who hunt deer and who view the coyotes as competition, and they trap them. And they have trapped, I'm guessing at this point, well over 120 animals off adjacent land, and you wouldn't know it.
Plenty more where that came from.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
They're always looking for good, rich territory, and basically what happens is you remove animals from a territory and the others just flow in like water.
JB in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, JB.
Hi.
Go ahead.
So, yeah, I have a weird detail about Chillicothe, Ohio, just south of Columbus. And over the last 5 years, I've been frequently down there with a lot of my friends, and we take our bird dogs down there. And we've noticed packs of dogs that are domestic dogs that have either ran away or got together somehow, and they run through those hills in packs. And I have countless stories of different people coming up to me and being like, I just seen like 15 wild dogs running through the street and running across the road. And you know, everyone always looks around to see if there's a person because they're all of different breeds. And it's like, oh, it must be a person with a, you know, with a bunch of dogs, and then there's no one around. And they're just running through the hills of Chillicothe.
That's actually, I am more afraid of feral dogs than I would ever be of coyotes or wolves, because dogs lack fear of people. And big dogs, when they get together and start wilding, that was always my least favorite thing to meet when I was out running with my little Boston Terrier. I would put him up around my neck like a lamb and carry him by his feet and just, you know, run away.
Let me ask you this, though. Is there any evidence that when wolves mated with coyotes and dogs, for that matter, that they stay together?
Well, no. Actually, yeah, that's a very interesting question. I don't know of dog-wolf hybrids. I think that doesn't happen.
Okay.
What's interesting here is that wolves will mate with coyotes only really out of desperation when they cannot find conspecific mates. So, and the problem is that they don't stay together. Once they, you know, the female will be impregnated, but she has to raise the young by herself. And that's a mess because, you know, she's nursing them and what, she's going out to hunt.
Yeah.
So it doesn't really work very well from a social standpoint or a young bringing up the young standpoint. Because the female coyote really depends on the male to be the provider while she's in the den with the baby.
And as you said, they mate for life. They're, or at least
they do.
They're monogamous.
They do, yeah. Right. So basically, you know, any of these hybrids that have resulted from wolf-coyote matings had one tough mama. she had to raise those young by herself. So, yeah, and no wonder they're so supremely successful.
JB, thanks for that call. Scott in Delaware, you're on the air. Hi, Scott.
Hi, Ann. I'm a longtime listener and a second-time caller.
Thank you.
And I always enjoy when you're on, Julie. It's always a pleasure. I'm a volunteer in Delaware County's Preservation Parks, and about 4 years ago, I closed up the Nature Center, and it was after dark in November. I went out on a night hike all by myself, and about a half hour later, I came around a sharp curve on the trail, and I walked upon two deer. They were about 10 feet in front of me. They didn't even know I was there. They stomped and snorted, and they ran off as fast as they could. I got to thinking, well, I should have never gotten this close to these deer. Something's going on, and I panned my flashlight to the left, and there were two coyotes about 10 or 12 yards away from me. And the reason they felt so confident, I think, is because they were behind a large fallen log, and they were standing behind that log. So I stood there for a very long 5 minutes and just kind of turned off the flashlight, turned it back on, and they were there. They didn't move a muscle. They did actually look at each other a little bit. One of them had bright blue eyes shining back. The other one had bright yellow eyes shining back. And like I said, after about 5 minutes, I thought, well, let me see what I can do. So I took one step towards them, just one step, and they literally just disappeared like ghosts.
Yeah.
They were hoping you didn't see them.
You talked about that yourself when you tried to hunker down to get a better look. They saw you move.
It's incredible, actually. I'm so used to stalking deer. Stalking deer with the intent to photograph them or just observe them is one of my hobbies. And I absolutely love to get as close as I can. So it's good practice. But, man, a coyote, the difference between the amount a deer will stand and stare at you before it turns to run and a coyote's like, oh, hello, bye.
Yeah. You know,
and they're gone. And it's so interesting because when they run, they look back over their shoulders. They look guilty, you know.
Yeah.
They just keep checking to see where you are. And they can get gone faster than any animal I know. It's just incredible how fast they are.
We'll see. Scott, thanks for that call. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about coyotes today with my guest, Julie Zickafoos, naturalist, artist, and author. We'll have a link to her website at WOSU.org/allsides. And Brad in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Brad.
Well, hello. Hi, Julie. I always enjoy listening to you on Ann Fisher's show. I go west a lot, Wyoming, Montana, Colorado. I've seen over the last 20 years a lot of coyote out there. And a ranger one time was giving a talk, and I was trying to remember exactly the numbers that he expressed, but he was talking about vocalizations of coyotes versus wolves. But what stuck in my mind, I might have the numbers wrong, but I remembered that he said something like, coyotes maybe have 140 vocalizations and wolves have 17. It was a huge difference in numbers. And I just wondered if you knew anything about that.
You know, I really don't know a lot about it, but I do know that I've observed the Western coyotes, you know, you'll get this string of yips, like yip, 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 and then they do this long tremolo howl, which is very, very typical. I just don't hear that in these eastern coyotes. What I do hear is they have a really interesting little bark. They go, burr, burr, burr. It's a rough little bark. And you'll hear that a few times, and then you'll usually hear a howl, but there's no tremolo. And then, of course, you hear the pack yipping that, you know, sounds very much like western coyotes. So I've discerned definitely a difference in the vocalization patterns of Western and Eastern coyotes. And this gets to a kind of an interesting thing, the whole coy wolf thing. And, you know, a lot of people, especially in the media, have been referring to them as coy wolves, and I was doing that for years because I thought, well, this animal seems so different. It eats a different prey base. It's much bigger. It has different teeth. And get this. These eastern coyotes stay with their parents for up to 2 years.
Wow.
Western coyotes stay for one. So there's a different social organization, but that seems to be linked to the fact that these eastern animals are taking down larger prey, and they might need more help.
Yeah.
Or in another way to look at it is they have these bonanzas of food when they kill a large animal, so why not have a bunch of pups around to eat it? So it's all very interesting. But the current thinking is that they are still coyotes,
yeah,
even though they may be 65% coyote, 11% wolf, and, you know, 6% dog, they are still coyotes. They have some other genes in there, but we should probably refer to them as coyotes.
Nancy in Columbus, you are on the air with Julie Zickafoos. Hi, Nancy.
Hi, Ann. Hi, Julie.
Hi.
I just wanted to say that I've really enjoyed this talk, and I've been seeing coyotes in Columbus, you know, the river valleys and the railroad tracks and just kind of no man's land areas over the past 20 years or so. And hearing you say that they've gotten bigger, I have definitely noticed that. And I worked in an office building near Dublin Road. And one day we watched two adult coyotes take down a full-grown adult deer.
Wow.
And it was the craziest thing.
Wow.
They did get her by the neck.
Wow.
They killed her very quickly. And, you know, our horror quickly turned to fascination, at least,
yeah,
in my case.
Yeah.
And I sort of observed the carcass after that.
Yeah.
And it was clean. The area was right next to a parking lot, an
right,
office building parking lot.
Right.
They didn't seem to have any fear, you know, in feeding on this carcass. But after about 3 days, everything was gone.
Yeah.
Totally cleaned up by,
yeah,
by nature.
Wow.
If you want a fun example from here, Google Julie Zickafoos, the lady vanishes. And you'll get my blog post about a doe that I found at about 5 in the afternoon, had been shot by someone. There's, you know, people around here sometimes go around and just shoot animals that are standing in the field out of hunting season just for fun.
Mm.
So she'd been dropped, and there she lay. And I went back the next morning, and that animal was gone. And I documented the coyote, you know, the traces I found that told me that, of course, coyotes, a pack of them, had done that, taken it away, cleaned it up, and literally removed the last bone and scrap of fur.
Gone.
It was fabulous. It was absolutely amazing. So, yeah, check that out, The Lady Vanishes.
Huh. Nancy, thanks for that call. We appreciate it. I'm turning now to Mike in Delaware. Hi, Mike. You're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Real quick, I ran a rescue group for about a decade for Alaskan Malamutes. And because of the way Malamutes are built and everything that goes with them, I started to learn a lot about coyotes because, unfortunately, I realized anybody can shoot any coyote whenever they want.
Yeah.
And Malamutes, being big, strong, prey-driven dogs, would often get shot by farmers and stuff, and I started to learn more about it. One thing I was going to say that I really dislike, though, and I think you touched on a little bit, is coyotes are not nasty at all. Yes, if you have a cat that you left out or a little dog, anything can happen, we know that. But we have so few predators left. I hate the fact that we can eradicate them the way we do.
And have in the past, yeah.
Yeah, and I know people who hunt, and it really annoys me that one person was working at my house one time and told me he was a hunter, and he snared 6 coyotes in one day around his house, and they're all hanging. And I'm thinking, they're basically dogs. You're just hanging them. You're killing them in an awful way. And your response is, well, I'm a hunter, and they're tearing into the... First of all, we all know the deer population is fine.
Mm-hmm.
And second of all, you're shooting a deer when you could go to a grocery store. As you've mentioned, they're taking down a deer for survival. I don't like the fact that the big bad wolf and the coyote have such an awful reputation when the reality,
yeah,
is, as we've mentioned a few times, any wolf that... when we wouldn't see those in Ohio anymore, and any coyote will run for the hills. If I'm taking a walk with my Malamutes out here in the country,
Sure.
And they're half the size of my dogs, mm-hmm. and they are afraid to death of any human. You brought that up. So I'll leave it with this. I just wish people could get better information out there. All predators are not a bad thing. We shouldn't be the only predator in the world.
Yeah.
And the way we're allowed to kill animals seems pretty awful. It's one thing if one was around your house and had been killing your animals. Mm-hmm. But just to be able to put snares out in your property and and hanging these poor dogs, and you can imagine what it would look like to see your dog get stuck in a snare.
It's not good. Yeah, I'm glad you touched on that because, you know, there's a movement afoot to reexamine our attitude toward coyotes. And, you know, nationwide, you can shoot them whenever you want, pretty much. And, you know, there's still coyote drives and coyote hunts being held with prizes for the most animals brought in. And Ohio has an open season year-round on them, which just seems messed up to me, given that we have burgeoning deer populations and, you know, rabbits and everything. I think we need these predators.
I'm sure you've seen that video from, what national park was it? Maybe Yellowstone, where they reintroduced wolves?
Oh, that's a lovely video, yes.
And how it changed the landscape back to the way it was.
Yeah, it's very moving, talking about how wolves began keeping elk away from the stream banks.
Yeah.
And the vegetation that grew back up because the elk were afraid that wolves were hiding in it.
Yeah.
and the resultant clarification of the streams and the diversity that sprang up because the streams were as they should have been.
Right. It was really incredible.
Beautiful.
The contrast. Tom in Columbiana, you're on the air. Hi, Tom.
Yes. Yeah, I wanted to make a couple comments. Over the years, I've noticed some coyotes during the day, which I know they're nocturnal, but two instances I saw coyotes, you know, crossing a road, and it just, you know, surprised me. I'd see them in the daytime, and you know, they do have a bushy tail and medium-sized animal. And anyhow, someone gave us a Norwegian elk hound pup, and you know, I would take him out in the evening before dark, and sometimes we'd hear coyotes. He would really get nervous when he'd hear them. You know, he knew they weren't friendly, and so anyhow, I wanted to get back in the house, so we got him in the house. But I think overall, coyotes are beneficial to the state of Ohio. Like you said, keeping down these smaller animals, and you know, especially the groundhogs and you know, the deer.
Yeah,
I've seen so many deer caucuses, you know, bodies this year along the road. And,
unbelievable.
You know, we get to different counties, and, you know, we just have a lot of deer. So,
Well, Tom, thanks a lot for that call. We appreciate it. 614-292-8513 is the number to call if you want to talk about coyotes today, and a lot of you do, so I'm going to try to get to all those calls. My guest is Julie Zickafoos, naturalist, artist, and author. We'll have a link to her her blog and her website at WOSU.org/AllSides. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Coyotes can live just about anywhere. They'll eat almost anything, and they colonize quickly, including here in Ohio. Author, naturalist, and artist Julie Zickafoos recently wrote about the spread of coyotes across North America. We'll have a link to her article at Birdwatchers Digest on our website at WOSU.org/AllSides. Julie joins us by phone. Julie, lots of calls. Also an email from Kyla. She asks, do I need to worry about a coyote attacking my toddlers if I live in a rural area and they are playing in our backfield?
You know, there have been two fatal attacks by coyotes on human beings. One was in California. I guess L.A. is a sort of a nexus of coyote issues because these animals have people have moved into their habitat in a big, big way. And the problem is that they feed the coyotes by leaving food out for their cats or their dogs or whatever, and the coyotes lose their fear. So there is some aggression in that area as a result of feeding. There was another very, very strange event in Nova Scotia where a 19-year-old girl was killed by a coyote. And I have no idea. Neither animal was rabid, but these things happen. But I think that there is very little reason to fear them in general. It is always a good idea to have your dog contained. A free-roaming dog is vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
Free-roaming house cats are extremely vulnerable. So keep your cats in, always. And but really, the human, for the number of coyotes that are around and the incidents with people in Ohio that I know of, practically nil. I just think the coyotes are very, very invested in staying away from people.
Charlotte in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Charlotte.
Oh, good morning. Do coyotes hunt possums and raccoons? Because here in Linden, those are the two wild mammals, I mean, aside from Homo sapiens non sapiensis. those are the two wild animals I see most. In fact, I was coming home one day, and a mama possum walked right by me, and I figured she was a mama because her midriff was so bulged, and her back hair was split down the part, so she looked like she was going bald on the part. So I figured, oh, she's carrying a full load. But last year, I saw about five possums run over on Weber Road walking home from work. But I'm wondering, do coyotes eat possums or raccoons?
Well, yeah, that's a good question. I don't think that in general possums are the tastiest. They certainly would be incredibly easy to kill. But I believe that, my Boston Terrier used to roll them. He would run out and literally bowl them over and then sort of like turn around and trot back to the house. Never hurt them, but just bowl them over. I don't think that they're very tasty. As you noted, possum roadkill will sit for a very long time.
Yeah.
A lot of, but have you ever noticed that a rabbit roadkill is gone within an hour?
Good point.
Yeah, they're not so tasty. Now, as far as raccoons, most predators do not like to go after an animal that will hurt them. And a raccoon is one of the baddest animals out there. And there are not many things that will tackle a raccoon. Here's a good example. I've had two different bobcats start hunting squirrels in my yard around my feeders, which is probably the best thing that has ever happened to me. One was in August of 2016 and one was in August of 2017. I have many photos. But I also had two orphaned raccoons who were about the size of, well, they were a little bigger than Chihuahuas. They were not very big. And I thought, oh, my gosh, these little things, they would come to eat under the bird feeder all hours of the day. And I watched them come out while the bobcat was crouched under the spruce, ready to hunt squirrels. And that bobcat never bothered him.
Interesting.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
A cat doesn't like to attack anything that's going to attack back.
Yeah. Yeah, keep it simple.
Keep it simple.
Keep it simple. Charlotte, thanks for that call. I'm turning now to Tom. In Columbus, you're on the air, Tom. Hi.
Yeah. Back in 1959, okay. There was a TV show called The Outdoor Show, and it was live. It was on Channel 10, and they would just have two fellows sitting at a desk talking about hunting, fishing, trapping, and so forth, and they had a lump in front of them on the desk covered with a bath towel, and they were talking about how incredibly unusual this was. And they were just building the drama, and then they finally uncovered, and it was a coyote. It was a roadkill in southern Ohio.
Huh.
They'd never heard of this before.
Ooh, 1959. Nice.
Right.
So they came here in 1919. Then
right.
It was all hands on deck hunting them. They were mostly eradicated, right, Julie? And then they've come back.
Well, yeah. I mean, the coyotes were first spotted in Ohio in 1919. They were probably almost certainly western coyotes. and, you know, kept at a low level. And what's interesting is that there was a study done that proclaimed that all the coyotes in Ohio were pure Western coyote ancestry. And it was revealed later that that study was based on three animals, which is not a very good study.
No.
So what has happened is that, and this is just literally in the last few decades, mm-hmm. these animals have swung around the eastern side of the Great Lakes and come from Pennsylvania and New England, and they're moving west again, possibly to meet their their Western ancestors.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the animals that are moving west now have a lot of dog and wolf genes, more wolf genes than dog, actually. So, yeah, it's super interesting. But, yeah, I would think that as of 1959, that would probably have been a Western coyote in Ohio.
Tom, thanks for that call. I'm turning now to Maria in Windsor. Hi, Maria.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks.
Good. I'm so thankful for this discussion. I am utterly enamored of coyotes. I love them. I'm fascinated by them. And have had many experiences directly with them. And I had a couple of questions.
Mm-hmm.
A few years ago, I had a coyote that was coming up to, I live on a pretty big property, and I'm assuming it was a he, was coming up to the dog fence. I have dog fencing over quite a large area off the back of my house. And he would come up a couple times a day and run the fence with my dogs. And then they would all kind of lie down, my dogs and the fence and the coyote, they would just lie down, go to sleep, take a nap for a while with only the fence separating them. And
wow.
Then after a while, the coyote would get up, he would sniff around a little bit, and then he would trot back off away.
Wow.
And then maybe later in the evening he would come and they would kind of go through it again. This happened for 7 or 8 weeks.
Wow.
And then
wow.
I didn't see him again. So the first question I have is, what would have happened if I had opened up the gate and let the coyote in?
Yeah. Boy, that's a great question.
Oh, it was just the neatest thing. And I'm assuming that it was a young-ish male, you know, maybe 18
yeah.
months, 2 years old, dispersal mm-hmm. time, something. I don't know.
Kind of like Fox and the Hound.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my
gosh.
Ask you
I'm getting all
yes.
upset now.
Just to eliminate possibility. Hold on just a second. Was any nobody was in heat, right?
Nobody. No, I had no
okay.
intact females.
Okay.
Nobody,
yeah.
No, nothing
it,
like that.
It actually reminds me of those photos, incredible photos by a National Geographic photographer of a sled dog that was tethered out that would, like a polar bear, would come up and they'd play.
Yes.
It was like, you know, anything can happen. I would think that if that coyote got in with your dog, they would have been all pals by then.
Yeah. After all that time.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, Maria, thanks. I'm going to move on because we've got some calls, and I'm turning to Mark in Sugar Creek now. Hi, Mark. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you guys today?
Good.
I have a question about the red wolf with coyotes. I know you were talking about the wolves up in Canada breeding with them and moving south. What about the re-release of the extirpated red wolf in the southern states near
yeah.
Blue Ridge Mountain.
That's a super, super interesting thing. This is native to the American Southeast and, you know, sort of a little bit of a swamp wolf in the Carolinas and Alabama and all down in there, and apparently extinct in the wild since the 1970s. And genetic analysis shows that the red wolf has up to 75% coyote in its genome.
Hmm.
So, apparently, this animal, if it ever was pure eastern wolf, was polluted by coyote genes quite some time ago. And so, the question, you know, that's the fascinating thing about these canids is that they are so freely hybridizing, and the gene flow seems to be so incredibly strong and free within them that it's very difficult to say what you've actually got, you know,
yeah.
when you look at these things. And the fact that they will interbreed with dogs is just amazing. So you've got that factor in there, too. But apparently the red wolves may have succumbed to genetic swamping by coyotes, probably coming up from Texas. So there are two different things going on. There are western coyotes pushing from the west to the east, and then there are Texas coyotes that are pushing up through the southeast and interbreeding, picking up a little bit of red wolf and just a dash of dog as they go north. And what's happening is these two different strains, the eastern coyote coming down from New England down the eastern seaboard and the coyotes coming up from the deep south, are meeting in northern Virginia. And that seems to be the nexus of coyote gene mixing now. It's fascinating stuff.
Mark, thanks a lot for that call. Now I'm turning to Branson in Springfield. Hi, Branson.
Hi, Ann.
Go
Hi,
ahead.
Hi, Julie.
Hi.
Hey, I just wanted to share. We've coexisted for the last 20 years with a den of coyote. They like to live right near a stream on our farm. And we have coexisted with our sheep and the coyotes for the whole time. Coyotes don't seem to want to go into any building. And so the sheep always have access to go into the building. It's just, they're just a beautiful animal that we've just loved to have. And, you know, we're cat lovers also. And I think it's a great thing to keep cats inside because we also like our birds. I try to promote in this area the benefit of the coyote, and it really still seems to be an uphill battle with people that like to sit in the stands and just take them out just for the sake of taking them out.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, the callers today have been a refreshing reprieve from that mentality.
Yeah, it's lots of great callers. And Branson, I'm going to let you go, and I'm going to move to Doug because I'm dying to know Doug's story in Coshocton. We're running out of time, Doug, but I wanted to get your call in. Hi.
Okay, I was going to make it quick, hopefully. It's the first time I've ever talked on the radio, and I might call it, pronounce it coyote. That's my habit. So anyway,
that's okay.
About something like 15 years ago in northeast Coshocton County, there was a coyote, just kept camping by my car. So, and I get along with all wild animals. So, you know, I don't know if it was wild or not. I can't tell. But anyway, it was real friendly, and I started feeding it dog food and stuff. And I thought it'd be really nice to have it around to eliminate predators, mm-hmm. You know, that were killing my chickens and peacocks and ducks and stuff.
Okay.
I thought it'd be nice to have the coyote around to get rid of predators.
Yeah.
So, I could tell he was intelligent. He knew that I didn't want him hurting my chickens and stuff. So he'd sneak to go kill a chicken. And
we're running out of time, Doug, so keep going.
Okay. And I'll try to be quick.
Yeah, you're going to have to.
One day he chased a deer, came back all bloody. Huh. And another day there was a possum under a rose bush, and I called him, and the possum, you know, like growled and hissed at him. He didn't want to have anything to do with the possum.
Well, it sounds like you somewhat domesticated him a little bit, or at least he knew the rules, right, Julie? We're just about out of time. Doug, thanks for that call. But, Julie, parting thoughts. We've got about 30 seconds.
I'm just thrilled with the stories we've gotten today.
Yeah.
And I'm thrilled with the general acceptance among the callers of coyotes in our midst. I think it's really awesome. So thanks so much for giving some time to coyotes and good press.
Yeah, thanks everybody for all these great calls. Really appreciate it. Appreciate your attention. Thanks for listening. Julie Zikafoos, it's been a long time, and hopefully not so long the next time.
All right. Thanks, Ann.
Julie Zikafoos, naturalist, artist, and author. Well, I'll have a link to her blog and her website at WOSU.org/allsides. Thanks again for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.